Welcome to the Lena Live Radio Hour, hosted by Professor Lena Miermont. Whenever Mark Barrandes joins us, it always promises to be a special occasion, and we're quite thrilled that Mark has agreed to join us again. Mark Barrandes is, of course, the highly acclaimed celebrity attorney and author of What Were You Thinking? An extraordinary resource providing not only legal advice in connection with marriages and divorce, but also just incredible wisdom where all human relationships are concerned. Let's listen to Mark discuss his work, his book, and his life.
This is Lena Live, and I'm your host, Lena Miermont. I have, again, tremendously distinct pleasure to have our guest who found time and desire to be with us again, in spite of his extraordinarily heavy, I would say, global schedule. And I will introduce him with the best abilities I can, but certainly this introduction will be just a little island considering the power of his expertise and presence in the world. This is Mark Barrandes we have today, who is the lawyer of tremendous distinguished career, who has basically covered every territory and every layer of law. And having his presentations and cases on the government and federal level, he also solved and helped tremendous amount of celebrity people with the complexity of the cases. And also, he certainly brought a lot of light, truth, and speaking to the truth in the courtroom. So it is my tremendous pleasure and privilege to introduce, again, our return guest, Mark Barrandes. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Lena. And I always feel unworthy of your unbelievable introductions. I'm humbled.
I'm glad I went at least tried to go that direction and not diminishing something, because frankly, words can go only that far. And I like actually to continue my introduction by saying that your presence, your role, and your significant contribution took place when you wrote your book. And that book, which has named What Were You Thinking, captivated so many minds and so many hearts. I've been somewhat going through different stages reading this book. My colleagues in our company felt that among literally thousands of books in law area still would not come close in certain areas and in certain qualities. And I'm saying this not because we have tremendous pleasure to have you and we know you, but because indeed the book speaks for itself. It's not just about the law, it's about people's life. It's about the most complicated, most sensitive, most tragic situations about which many people are afraid to talk about. We're all thinking about this. We all have situations which we think are different from others, but somehow with your vision and with your determination to find the truth and to express the truth, you gave us and shared so generously so many answers.
Thank you. I very much appreciate that.
I thought that because this book is so profoundly and endlessly comprehensive, since we spoke, I think I became a little bit even more educated because of the way you wrote this book. In fact, it's not just for reading, obviously. It's for thinking, it's for contemplation, and it is for preparation. And because we had general discussions with, yes, some details about your book, I thought that it would be very useful to go into depth, and I choose the chapter number 6, where detective doctors and experts are present in your description. You give us and you share with us the role of each of them. And my first question will go actually to the conclusion. I have to tell our listeners to remind that your book is planned in such a wonderful, wise way. It's very easy to orient yourself because you always have conclusive chapter, like a cadet advice to remember. And if you can, frankly, forgive me, I will for a moment escape the beginning of this chapter and go right to the first paragraph of your advice to remember, because it really connects to the one of the tissue of the issue what you're talking about. You're saying that only hire an expert if your lawyer can assure you with a reasonable degree of legal certainty that economic investment in the expert's fee will yield an equal or greater return on economic and non-economic value. I'd like you to comment on this and explain to us some principles where we go beyond just hiring the lawyer.
Well, I just shared this with a client maybe 2 hours ago that was just beginning to start the journey with regard to a custody case. If experts are very important to a court in terms of them providing information that they might not otherwise have access to, but that information that you're giving to the court must be valuable. And the way that I've always advised clients is that you need to be able to quantify the justification for paying experts by saying, what am I going to get back in return from them? So I'm always looking, if you're hiring, for instance, a forensic expert to value a company, are the dollars that you're spending, whether it's $10,000 or $25,000 to pay that expert, do you think that by doing that, you are going to increase the overall value of the marital estate that will be prepared for allocation by doing that? And in most circumstances, you will. There are other circumstances where people will say, well, let me hire an expert because I want to show that my wife is capable of earning X dollars and therefore my support should be lower. Well, courts can generally assess the educational background and the resources of an individual, and oftentimes that sort of information is not particularly probative or helpful to the court, although it's very expensive to obtain that information. So it's basically a balancing act. Are you going to be getting true value for the dollars you're spending in terms of either something that you want economically or something that you want non-economically?
And in fact, thank you for bringing your case, because I just was about to talk about the case which you're describing in this chapter. And I'm not sure I will pronounce the name of the island. It's Mykonos. We're talking about one of the Greek islands where your client was traveling to?
Mykonos.
Sorry for mispronunciation. I truly enjoyed reading all of this, and I was shifting constantly from legal things to fantastic picturesque scenery, and you described this with such zest of life, and yet there's immediately hammer of the legal battle. It's a very revealing moment where indeed a person had to hire a private investigator. So let me ask a few questions at once, and you please feel free to answer the way you like to answer. First of all, we'd like to know a little bit about this case. Also, I believe that that was a bit complicated because there was a clash of different traditions where in Europe, nude beaches are legal and somewhat part of their traditions, where in the United States, you said it very eloquently, in our conservative land, it is not permissible. So I'd like you to comment on this case where your private investigator was traveling all the way to Greece to prove the point.
Oh, well, her family actually had a home in Mykonos, and she ended up taking her 10-year-old daughter to the family home in Mykonos. And while there, the child was accustomed to, and it had been the tradition that they went to the beach, and at that particular beach, people elected to wear clothes, and some elected not to wear clothes. And during the course of the party's marriage, the husband had always gone with them and their daughter to that very same beach. And he would take video and things of that nature during the course of it. What he wasn't expecting was that when he decided that he was going to allege in the more conservative court where this custody matter was being heard, that he was going to attempt to, and in fact did, send a private investigator to Mykonos to take pictures and video of the mother on the beach with the child and with the other naked people. There was nothing in the video where the child was acting like anything was out of the ordinary for anyone being at the beach. What the father wasn't expecting was that the video that he had recorded previously would come into evidence, and in that video, this same husband who was shocked by the nudity on the beach was commenting and narrating, zooming in on women that were naked and providing his own, perverse eloquence regarding what he was observing. So in that particular case, the court, after reviewing the videotape of the investigator and the videotape of the father with his true colors, instantaneously awarded custody to my client and rejected everything that the father was seeking.
That is quite a story. And just as your style of your language in your book and just in this answer, one can imagine there are very, very few lawyers who can be so artistically descriptive and yet so precisely factual.
But that particular story really illustrates exactly what we were talking about previously. That is, I'm sure the father in that case, I can't remember the amounts that were spent, but you're flying a private investigator to Greece from, in this particular case, it was the Washington, D.C. area. You're having to pay for his lodging on a very expensive island in Greece, and he's charging by the hour, whether it's $100 an hour, $150 an hour to be there, over a period of, I think he was probably there for 72 hours or maybe a little bit longer. It was quite a bill. What did he get in return for investing that money? Absolutely nothing. In fact, it hurt him.
Yes.
So you need to be... you need to exercise proper judgment and counsel when you're making a determination about whether or not to utilize an investigator or, for that matter, any expert.
And that's exactly what was quite shocking to me. I just was contemplating and thinking what kind of education could those two girls get if money would be invested in that instead of all this unnecessary exercise for no reason. It's just a tremendous, tragic waste of human effort and human finance, which brings another question. Again, it's somewhat recollection from Advice to Remember and from the chapter itself. Here is a question when I was reading. Again, a somewhat few questions in one. You're saying something, I will be as close as I can to the text, that just because your expert or specialist will say something to you, it doesn't mean that court will ultimately agree with this. And that puts a client in a very precarious situation because basically there should be rapport, should be some minimum trust, needless to say, a rightful investment in litigation and so forth. But if there is a discrepancy, how one can go about this and what client's supposed to do?
Well, that's why it's important that you hire the best lawyer that you can possibly hire, because that lawyer should be able to advise and counsel you as to whether or not the expected testimony of an expert will be accepted for the purposes that it's being offered. Courts can easily be insulted by experts if it's involving simple issues that are really, when you boil them down, common sense issues. An expert should only be utilized in those instances where there is a certain level of expertise that the court does not have and that the court will benefit by hearing that information. If it's not something that is particularly unique or necessary as a factual predicate for some sort of a financial transaction, for instance, then the testimony probably should not be offered. And again, a good lawyer should know when an expert will work and when it won't work, and he should know that well in advance of, first of all, hiring the expert, and second, in advance of actually presenting him in court.
I will come back to the lawyer situation, but I just wanted to stay for a second regarding the experts, because you suggest that it should be an federate access to any experts that are retained. So you're somewhat encouraging a client to be involved enough to give herself or himself an opportunity to be in direct contact with an expert, not just through the lawyer, but in direct contact.
That's right, because I'm a firm believer that if people like you on a personal level, they're more likely to perform better for you. And if what the client is seeking is something that is appropriate, then I certainly want my client to interact with the expert so that the expert understands all of the information that my client may have that would be helpful to him and her or her in terms of rendering an opinion. It's the same thing with a lawyer. If your lawyer likes you, this may come as a shock to some people, but if your lawyer likes you, he's going to do better for you than if your lawyer is not particularly fond of you.
I do not want to go away from this chapter, because even though we dedicate in this program just to this one chapter, I absolutely can assure you that you express so much there that it hardly will be another couple or maybe even three programs. However, you made me think of something of your another point. It's nightmare client of the lawyer. I was quite captivated by your description, and the reason I'm bringing this up, because you're talking about certain rapport, if not relationship, but certain simpatica which needs to be between the lawyer and the client. And I wanted to ask you a highly subjective question. If there is and maybe you had that situation, if there is let's say nearly ideal mutual respect and understanding between the lawyer and the client, and the client indeed is very guilty, made a mistake, and nearly ruined his or her life by doing something quite profoundly wrong. What is the lawyer position if lawyer really feels that this client is basically fundamentally is a very solid, trustworthy, respectable person, but that something puts him still in the in responsibility to be objective and to present this client in the best possible light? How it can play out?
Well, it's really very easy. The ethical obligation upon the lawyer is to make a determination after meeting with the client or learning of the information that the client may have, whether or not that lawyer, whether it's he or she, can zealously advocate for the interests and the rights of the client. If the lawyer's not capable of doing that, I don't have to like everything that my client does. I don't even have to like my client to meet the standard of care in terms of being a zealous advocate. If you believe that you can't zealously advocate for your client, then you shouldn't be taking any money from that client and you shouldn't be representing them. My earlier point was that I just think as part of basic human nature, if you like someone, then you're going to do a better job for them just because that's just the way we are as human beings. That doesn't mean I can, there are people that I have represented previously that I did not particularly care for, but I nonetheless did an excellent job for them because that's what I was hired to do.
Mark, I didn't introduce you well enough because you just proved another phenomenal point, so rare today, speaking truth to power. And when I'm talking about the power, I'm not talking about really official power. I'm talking the power of the truth. And I just wanted to say, of course, I can only speak for a certain amount of very well respected legal professionals in this country and happen to know someone in Europe. But you have this earned tremendous power speaking the truth. I don't think you know how to avoid it. It is in your nature, it is in the way you think, and it creates this golden objectivity which serves the top of humanity.
Well, that's very kind of you to say. If I could only get my wife to agree with you, that would be a lot better off.
I see. Well, I have to tell you that my producer here is choking in laughter. However, I wanted to say that perhaps I will elaborate a little bit in dialectic here, union of opposites. I think because of tremendous rapport and closeness between you and her, agreement is not part of the deal. Perhaps a disagreement will create an agreement, but closeness, of course, brings and reveals sometimes collisions and sometimes complexities, but I'm sure deep down she knows that it's time when you're right and it's time when she is right. I hope I said something right.
As my mother would say, from your lips to God's ears. I hope you're right.
I see. No, thank you. We had a wonderful extension, which brings another question. I like to talk about the role of the lawyer, because even though you've been very explicit, it has to be some professional rapport, it has to be trust. Lawyer needs to express his rules for behavior for his client, and client should agree to those rules, regulations, tactics, and strategy. Yet we are coming back to this challenge of some extra individuals, extra participants, and this is detectives and the doctors and the experts. I almost can envision that a lawyer is like a conductor, and he knows every musician, he knows every keys and part which musician needs to play. Every musician plays its own instrument, but it has to be under the thumb of the conductor, whether this musician likes it or not. So the question is, Obviously, lawyer is suggesting the group of those individuals, but where there is a borderline between a expertise, because doctor comes from one end, the expert from another, and detective comes from total different field. How would you describe how they can agree where and how certain situation will benefit the client the most?
Well, I think it's up to the attorney to direct the film. I mean, whatever it is that you're attempting to present, the picture you're trying to paint, it's up for the lawyer to pick the materials or the people or the medium that would be best utilized in order to accomplish those ends. So I don't think it's something that has to be that you necessarily come into the case with in terms of an overall plan. Your vision for a case develops as you garner information. And that information, the picture that you thought you were going to paint at the beginning of a trial, may be completely different than the actual finished product. I mean, there's been many times. I'm amused, should I say, when I see lawyers come into court with big binders. They have everything laid out exactly how they're going to do X, Y, and Z. Well, in my experience, you know, you can have an outline of what you're attempting to do, but it can just take one or two questions from a judge to totally throw that outline off, or testimony from a witness or a piece of evidence. It can totally change the whole design. And, you know, a good lawyer is able to adapt to those situations, whereas you'll see it with younger lawyers and even, unfortunately, with some older lawyers. The only thing that they know how to do is just ask the next question that they wrote down in the binder. So, again, you have to, it's again, I'm placing the burden upon the lawyer to be able to basically paint that portrait.
As a few, literally reading my mind, because I was going to shift for a little while from your book and go to the education. You just brought the one very important issue of competence of the lawyer. It's just literally endless. I will again compare this to a conductor, because you cannot 100% predict what kind of interpretation will be in this particular evening, in this particular hall, and et cetera, et cetera. So adjustment, instant orientation, or sometimes even change of a tactics should be very natural for the lawyer. So you literally give your fate, your life, in the hands of that lawyer. I wanted to ask you about some educational process. I'm very skeptical about this, and I hope I'm wrong, but I feel it's just a general trend today. Give facts, mechanically learn them through the computer, and once you have this diploma, you have very little abilities to deal with a human being, to integrate the law with a human being, and ultimately present the case and be very powerful in a courtroom. So perhaps you can talk a little bit about your education and what brought you to this extraordinary level you are now.
Well, I don't think I'm at any extraordinary level. I can tell you that when I was younger, it was, I guess, pointed out to me at an early age that perhaps my mouth didn't know when to stop speaking at times, and I would be corrected and guided in certain ways, and I would attempt to evade things, whether it be discipline or whatever else I was trying to avoid, homework, it doesn't matter. You know, I would always try to use my words to work around things. And then I was fortunate to be selected to become a page in the Senate. And a page is an individual that basically runs errands for senators and runs around and does whatever needs to be done. And I sat there and I watched all these other senators, most of whom were lawyers, speak. And I thought to myself, well, I can do that. I think I can do it the same way that they're doing it. So at 15 years old, that's when I decided that I would become a lawyer. Yeah, that's the true story.
Well, then I'm right. You're on a very great level. From 15 years old, you went all stages, and I believe that, it is a gift. You just expressed yourself that nothing would stop you to express yourself. And I don't know, we somehow avoided to learn a little bit more about your developing as a professional. And I'm so, so glad that this mystery now been discovered. So actually, it was very natural.
But I have to be honest with you, Lena, and tell you that if I would have had my choice, I wanted to be an airplane pilot. But unfortunately, my vision needed to be corrected. And in that point of time, when I was a child, they weren't allowing airplane pilots to wear. If you needed glasses, you couldn't fly a plane. So. Well, that's what I wanted to be, and, you know, my wife still chastises me all the time because whenever a plane flies overhead, I sit there and stare at the plane to watch because I want to know exactly what it is. When I wonder where they're going, where they're coming from.
I am extraordinarily sympathetic with your dream, but I wanted to tell you again, unions of opposites, your mother has much more peaceful nights knowing that her son grounded and that he is such a successful lawyer rather than risk-taking pilot.
Well, I could also tell you that that may not be true because the one day my mother decided to come with my father to watch me in court on a very contested case, the husband in that particular case lost his cool and literally physically attacked me in the courtroom, at which point seven bailiffs restrained him, and he was, of course, immediately thrown in jail. And my mother watched that. So I think at that point she was probably thinking that I would have been better off maybe in a 747.
Wow. That is truly a remarkable story. Wow. I just was caught off guard because to have something like this happened in a courtroom and nothing could be caught on time, prevent your injury, that is truly extraordinary.
The people get crazy. I've had people, you know, I remember one guy who stood out in front of a courthouse and handed out brochures to people saying what a horrible person I was. Let me tell you, you can't pay for that kind of advertising. Everybody that he gave a brochure to wanted to call me. So, you know, it's just amazing how these things turn out. And that guy later ran for Congress. That's what even made it funnier.
Mark, I think you're overly ready for your next book. In fact,
I don't know what that will be yet, but someone just asked me that the other day. Matter of fact, it was a judge just came up to me the other day and said, when's the next book coming out?
Absolutely. Wanted to say, and I understand it's much easier said than done, but if you could arrange to translate your book in some at least 5-6 major languages, that would be a tremendous, tremendous contribution, not only into the law, but just to unite this very turbulent global world. The reason I mention this, even though I have, frankly, a bit of a hard time to leave the subject and just a story you shared with us, purely emotionally, but I like to cover some other territory in your book. And I wanted to tell you that one of the reasons I wish it would be in a different language is because this book is literally for everyone. When you're talking about famous people, there is some kind of stereotype or standard thinking, well, these people are very wealthy. If they have some problems, it's just sensational and just for publicity. You bring so much class, so much quality, so much thought. And I just wanted to thank you for making this book even more profound, because there are personal stories of those people who went through this extremely, I would say, almost treacherous road to fame, especially older generation. I never had time to speak perhaps about some certain individuals which you who actually wrote their own stories in your book, hopefully, I would say very cautiously, if you will have time. I wanted to cover and to talk a little bit more about heroes of your experience, your friendships, which took place in this book. But what is particularly very moving, that you connected different times. Intergeneration, culture, art, business, method of looking at the things on a very personal and very human way. Literally all of this make that book truly unique. It's way beyond just the law, way beyond just the most valuable advice, huge saving of money, needless to say. But it just gives a tremendous panoramic view of what is life all about on the different levels. So coming to that, I will ask you, would you perhaps mention the most significant or one of the most significant experiences where you felt that the person already with a legendary recognition had to face with the most difficult and challenging situations in life?
Boy, that is a really difficult question.
Because there are so many of them.
I've dealt with people, you know, the greatest horror for anyone is losing a child. And, you know, that's extremely difficult. And in a sense, when people are in custody cases and they don't win, they feel that they have, in essence, lost that child, although it's really no comparison to the actual, you know, physical loss or death of a child.
Yes.
I've had people face, horrible diseases. I mean, it's the question you've asked is just so broad. Mm-hmm. It would just be, it's literally impossible for me to select one type of pain or horror and propel that above something that to someone else, you know, would be, you know, very difficult to deal with.
I guess, frankly, what I meant to ask, and I didn't ask it in a more precise way, yes, obviously it's not possible to talk about one or two or maybe even half a dozen examples. You actually answered the question which I did not ask in a very correct, clear way. I wanted to see, as a lawyer, what kind of level of tragic situations you had to deal with. And you really answered that question. So it's a very broad scale. And I wanted to mention to you that when I read about Dr. Shah and Dr. Katz, which I invite everyone to read, especially because these people dealing with the medicine, that moved me very, very deeply.
Oh, and those are two fabulous, absolutely fabulous doctors, both cardiologists. And when you talk about people with a big heart, both of them have hearts that are even bigger than their brains, that are pretty intense stuff. These are very smart guys, and and I think both of them have written books themselves. So they're wonderful men.
And that was just one of the examples where I feel that I'm on a huge cruise, going from island to the island, because You're talking about law and most intricate, most challenging cases. And yet, in a few pages, there is a tremendous life of giant individuals. This book, Mark, I believe, not only unique because, obviously, because you wrote it, but also because, as I said, it gives a very unusual spectrum of thoughts, emotions, experiences, and definitely a sense of profound responsibility for your life and life for people you care. Mark, I would like to thank you for this another just a very memorable, very unusual conversation today, because we learn some other angles, some other moments of the truth which you described and so generously shared with us. And I like to say that Horace Mann, which I think I mentioned once, said about you once, seek not greatness, but seek truth, and you will find both.
Well, that's true, and that's profound.
And since you agreed with this, I wanted to thank you for participation again. I hope that we will continue our association. And I wanted to thank you for what you're doing for all us human beings.
Well, I appreciate that. And if I could take one moment just of personal privilege here, Lena, this past week, I lost a very, very dear friend who was not only a unbelievable friend, but an unbelievable lawyer. And he was taken from us just in a very short 3-week period of time. And, you know, when you define a great friend, the story that I'd like to just relate to you very quickly, there was a time earlier in my career where I had to appear in a federal court in Washington, D.C. before a very crotchety judge and well-known judge at that point in time. And it was at a hearing that was starting at 8:30, but was only supposed to take 10 minutes. And I was going to then leave that particular matter and then proceed to another courthouse in the area out in Fairfax County to start a custody case. And the custody case was a very difficult case, and my friend was the opposing counsel in that case. Well, as it went, the judge in Washington, D.C., was taking quite a bit longer with the other cases, such that I was going to be delayed in arriving for my trial in Fairfax. Well, I called the court and I let them know, and I called my friend and I let him know that I was running late, and he said fine. And the court, you know, I just got a voicemail. And at 10 o'clock, when the trial was supposed to start, the judge took the bench. And when he took the bench, he said, "We've received a phone message from Mr. Berendez that he was going to be late. This is the Circuit Court of Fairfax County. Our court starts at 10 o'clock. And he said, "Mr. Lewis, give me your opening argument." Well, my friend then was put in the position of starting a case when I wasn't there and my client is sitting there at counsel table without any lawyer. And what he did was to proceed, for as eloquent as he was, he proceeded to ramble on aimlessly for about a half hour, deliberately delaying the case until I could arrive. And I literally walked into the door, and a minute later he concluded his argument, and I presented my case. That is not only a great friend, that was a great lawyer as well. So I just want to pay tribute to Glenn Lewis and to wish all of his children and his wife the very best as they cope with a terrible loss.
My deepest condolences to Mr. Lewis's family. My deepest condolences to you. And I feel very privileged to hear that story. Thank you profoundly for sharing that. And also, I wanted to thank you for this tremendous tribute to what is indeed friendship is, to what indeed mutuality. It is something when he would start his thought and you will end this, and vice versa. I am terribly sorry you lost this friend and colleague. And again, thank you so much for sharing this. I cannot find.
Well, I appreciate you letting me have the opportunity to do that. Yeah, it's a little way of paying a tribute, and you know, I was honored to be a pallbearer for him just the day before yesterday, and it's just a tragic loss, not only for his son Alex and Connor and Avery and Kara, I'm very inspired by the fact that his son Alex is now starting his legal career, and that the Lewis tradition will hopefully carry on to the next generation.
And may I be a little bit presumptuous? The fact that his son is in similar steps with his father, even though his father became more of a spiritual figure, but now perhaps as a very unique colleague, you will somewhat continue and being of help to Mr. Lewis's son. So he is so fortunate to have you at the moment when he is in such a profound grief. So I thank you, Mark. You are a tremendous human being. And I will say that we are very fortunate to have music. And when this program will be finally thought and finished, we will have a very special music tribute to your friend.
Thank you, Mina. And thank you, Julian.
Thank you. And I would say until next time, we had just a tremendous human being, Mark Berendez. We had many qualities in the same, in one program. Mark certainly exhibited his, again, power of the lawyer with a skill, vision, and just unshakable respect for the truth. Mark, thank you so, so much. And I will conclude in saying that that was Lena Live, another program with for all of you. I'm Lena Mirmont. Until next time, I wish you well with a great journey in reading Mark Berendez's book with a name, title, and thought, What Were You Thinking?
You heard celebrity attorney and author Mark Berendez. Here is a musical tribute which I composed for Mark's late friend, the distinguished attorney Glenn Lewis. We'll see you next Thursday on the Lena Live Radio Hour. Until then, I'm Julian Lampert.